Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to learn together this evening. Tonight, we are going to be doing the Haggadah Shel Pesach of Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver. Tonight's share is sponsored anonymously. L'zecher Nishmas, Mordechai David ben Shmuel Chaim, Dovi Herman, whose yard site is tonight. The Neshama Shev and Aliyah, we miss him terribly. And Hashem, our learning, Shavi Yizuchus, the learning we do here in Beis Mordechai David should be a zuchus for his neshama. Okay, so the Haggadah of Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver is, how did I choose this Haggadah? Because one of my Talmidim said, why don't you do the Haggadah of Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver this year? And I said, oh, I have that one on my shelf, and I never tried that one yet. So I tried it this year, and it's taka very good. So what we're going to do is a little bit of a different order than normally, because I already gave a shiur on this Haggadah in Yeshiva, on the first part of the Haggadah. So I figured we'll put that one online, and then maybe I'll fill in. So we'll start with the things that I didn't say in that year, so that we'll have, people can have more to choose from. But I'll give the same introduction, and the introduction is as follows. Who was Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver? It's good to know who the person was whose Torah we're going to be learning this evening. So Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver was a Lithuanian Rav in the 1800s. He was a very interesting person. He was a very big Rav in some very small towns. He was known as one of the greatest Mekubalim of all of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and he pulled that off even without being a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov was someone who came to Vilna in the last 2 years of the Vilna Gaon's life, and he must have been named after the street in Harnov, and he came in the last 2 years of the Vilna Gaon's life, and he picked up a lot of the learning from the Vilna Gaon, a lot of Torah from the Vilna Gaon. And then, in the 10 years after the Graz Petira, before Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov made Aliyah, before he moved to Eretz Yisrael, he was one of the Olim of the Talmidei Agra, he became totally obsessed with publishing anything he possibly could from the Graz. And a lot of the Graz stuff was published in those 10 years. During those 10 years, there was this young Bacher, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, who was 8 years old when the Graz died, who moved to Vilna at the age of 13 or 14, and he learned with Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov from the age of 14 to the age of 19, 18 or 19. So he spent like 5 years with Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov learning all of the Torah of the Vilna Gaon. So that's our Yitzchak Isaac, and that's where he picked up all the Kabbalah Sagra, all the Kabbalah from the Vilna Gaon. He picked up between the ages of 14 and 19, because he must have not learned that you're not supposed to do Kabbalah until you're 40. So he was one of the greatest Mekubalim of the Talmidei Hagra. He lived only into his early 60s. He died in 1853. He was Rav in Tiktin, in Solvak, and other small towns in Europe. He wrote many, many Svarim. He wrote defenses of Kabbalah, because there were a lot of people attacking Kabbalah. And he wrote this beautiful Haggadah. And this Haggadah, based on the flyer, it seems that it's been republished more recently with a nicer cover, but expanded, I would imagine, expanded on the inside also. But this Haggadah really has three parts to it. The first part is some Shabbos Haggadah drushes that he gave. I did not have a chance to read through any of those. They are much longer than my Shabbos Haggadah drushes. second part is something called Yad Mitzrayim, which is not really the name of the whole Haggadah. Yad Mitzrayim is his introduction to the Haggadah. And he really lays out the Yesodos, but he develops a lot in Kabbalah in the Hakdama Yad Mitzrayim. We are not going to do that either, because that's even longer, and I didn't really go through it. The third part is the Yad Chazaka. It's the part of the Haggadah where he goes through piece by piece, and he does. It's a classic Haggadah commentary, a little bit of Kabbalah sprinkled in, but not really. It's mostly like a very straightforward Haggadah commentary, like you would expect from any of the other Gedolim in the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. Meaning, it's exactly what you'd expect from one of the Gedolei Achronim in terms of the style of the Haggadah. But it's a commentary written as a commentary on the Haggadah, and it is wonderful. So like any commentary that's specifically written on the Haggadah, and it's not just a collection of various things that a particular Gadol said at random times, there are certain yesodos that he keeps coming back to. Meaning anyone who wrote a real commentary on the Haggadah sees in the Haggadah not just a collection of varts. They see like a message, like a unifying theme in the Haggadah, and this is certainly no exception. He sees a clear message in the Haggadah, and that message is essentially that when we left Mitzrayim, the world changed in terms of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the Bria, in terms of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. The world was renewed, there was a Hischachus with a new way of Hashem relating to us, and it was much more direct in terms of Hashkachas Hashem. Prior to us leaving Mitzrayim being Mekabel the Torah, there were no mitzvos for us to be rewarded through. There was what would happen to us was not determined based on mitzvos that we did or didn't do. It was based on whatever was decided for other reasons. And only once we left Mitzrayim and we had the ability to have Torah and mitzvos, did we leave the Derech HaTeva, what he calls the Derech HaTeva, and move into what he calls Derech Neis. Now, Derech Neis does not mean that as soon as you do an Aveira, you get struck down with lightning, or as soon as you do a mitzvah, all of a sudden money comes down from the sky, or anything like that. But it means that there is a correlation between our behavior and what happens to us in this world. And he said that was a change in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu ran the Bria, and he thinks that this is a foundational idea. And he says the foundations of our Emunah are built through the Yetzias Mitzrayim story, and that's why we're going to find throughout the Haggadah emphasis on teaching children well beyond what we would normally teach children. I mean, we're a religion that believes in teaching children in general, but it goes well beyond the normal rules and parameters of how much and who and in what context we teach our children. And those are themes that will continue to show up throughout the Haggadah. So what I'm going to do is I would like to start with Dayenu, go from there to the end of Magid, and then go back to the beginning, and we'll see how much time we have. So starting with Dayenu, which is obviously all the way toward the very end of Magid. So we talk about Kama Malus Tavus L'Makom Aleinu, and then we go right into the Dayenu. So Kama means how many, right? So how many are there? How many Dayenus are there? So he said, if you count them, there are 15. 15 Dayenus. He says, why the number 15? So he suggests that 15 represents the ability to go from Tachlis HaShiflus, from the lowest of the low, to the Tachlis HaShleimus, Bebinin Beis HaMikdash. Why does 15 represent that? Because that's how long it takes the moon to go from a nothing to a full moon. That it takes 15 days for the moon to go from a nothing to a full moon. Yisrael is Nimshal al-Levana. We count our months based on lunar months, not based on solar months. Klal Yisrael is compared to the moon, and therefore we dafka pick a number that brings us through the process of Hashem elevating us using the number of days it takes for the moon to become full. He writes, once we went through that process, unlike the moon, we don't wane again. Meaning we don't have a point where we go back to zero. Meaning that emunah remains with us forever. The emunah that was built with the 15 stages, that stays with us forever. So that's his opening comment to Dayenu. But then he gets into some of the detailed lines of Dayenu. So we're going to pick a couple of them. We're not going to go through all of them. But one of the lines is, Ilu ha'achilonu es haman v'lo nasan lanu es ha'shabbos. Had Hashem given us the man and not given us Shabbos. So it mentions Shabbos separately from all other Torah mitzvahs, meaning Shabbos, l'chora, is one of 613 mitzvahs. I would have said, Ilu achilanu es haman, v'lo nasan lanu es ha-mitzvahs, right? Why is it v'lo nasan? And we have a separate one for that. Ilu kirvanu v'rasine v'lo nasan lanu es ha-Torah. Why is Shabbos singled out from all of the other mitzvahs? So he says it's because Chazal tell us, the Gemara and Shabbos tell us, that Shabbos is shkula keneged kol haTorah. That Shabbos on some level, in some way, is the equivalent of the whole rest of the Torah, because Shabbos shows a special maila of Klal Yisrael. And he says that just like, and this is where he gets a little Kabbalistic, he says just like Shabbos is the Merkaz Kol HaBriya, it's the focal point of the entire Bria, it's the Nekuda Emtzais, that's focal point, right? It is the central point of everything that happens Bivav Merchakim, from the six distant points. So therefore, Shabbos is Mekayim, everything that happens in the Sheshes Yemei HaMaaseh, which is fascinating because nothing actually happened on Shabbos. Right? Shabbos was a day of rest. Shabbos was a day that Hashem didn't do anything. But the whole Sheshes Yemei HaMaaseh won't exist without Shabbos. It's only Shabbos that's Mekayim the whole rest of the Bria. So too, there's a klal, the Gemara says, Ein Mazal LiYisrael, which means that the Mazalos, the natural order of the world, doesn't apply to us, which means we don't exist in the natural world. So just like Shabbos, there was nothing that was actually done. It was a day of rest. And yet, it's Mekayim, the entire Bria. So too, Klal Yisrael doesn't exist. There's Ein Mazal Yisrael. Ein Lahem Shum Metzius Ba'olam. And nevertheless, we do exist. And not only do we exist, we're the cause for all of existence. That we shouldn't think that if we don't keep Shabbos, then we'll be able to make a living. But if we keep Shabbos, we're not going to be able to make a living, because that's not the way Klal Yisrael works. Our mazon is talui in l'mayla min ha-teva. It's talui in something supernatural. And adrava, Shabbos is the day that gives bracha to all the other days of the week. And that's why we dafka highlight Shabbos, because of our unique relationship with Shabbos. And that bears out in the halacha. Goyish ha-shavas, chayiv misa. Right? It's, Shabbos is something unique to us. A guy is allowed to do other mitzvos. Why is he not allowed to do Shabbos? Because Shabbos represents something that's unique to the Jewish people. And that's why we highlight in the Dayenu specifically Shabbos. Okay, then we move on and we say, Ilu Kirvanu, this is the most, probably the most famous kasha in the whole Dayenu. Ilu Kirvanu Lefnei Arsinai V'lo Nosan Lanu Es HaTorah. Right? If he brought us Arsinai, he would not have given us the Torah, then Dayenu. So the obvious kasha everyone asks, what value is there to be brought Lefnei Arsinai if we're not going to have the Torah? So somebody at your Seder will say, well, there's a mushel of a perfume shop, right? You know, that's that normally makes it into one of the kids' Haggadahs, right? But let's maybe go in a different direction than the mushel from the perfume shop. So he says, really, there are two kashas over here. First of all, the tachlis of the entire Brias HaOlam was for the Torah. How could you say that it would be enough to not have the Torah? You know, forgetting about what the value is going to Har Sinai, what's the value of anything? All of the previous dayanim are irrelevant if we don't get the Torah. The tachlis, you know, the Netziv writes in the Zakdamat to Sefer Shmos, that Sefer Shmos is called the Sefer Sheni by Chazal. Why is it called Sefer Sheni? To highlight that everything you did in the first book of the Chumash is only there so that we can get the Torah in Sefer Shmos. It's the tachlis of everything. It's the purpose of creation. Im lo brisi yomam v'layla, chuko shemayim v'aretz lo samti. If not for the covenant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Nesinas HaTorah, the whole earth doesn't exist. There's no need for it. The whole Indian of Metzias, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is only for the Torah. So what does it mean? V'lo nasa lanu esra? It's unthinkable. And then you have the question, and also what's the value of going in front of our Sinai? So he says that the Sinas HaTorah was really, and this is also a little Kabbalistic, he says that the Sinas HaTorah was really two bechinos in the Sinas HaTorah. There were two elements of the Sinas HaTorah. Element number one of the Sinas HaTorah was that Kodesh Baruch Hu spoke to us directly without any emtsa'i, without any middleman. And that happened in the first two Dibros. The first two Dibros, where the Gemara says, Porcha Nishmasam, that our Neshamas left because we couldn't handle the intensity of a direct Dibor from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Anochi v'lo yielacha mipi agvura shemanum. We heard those directly from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And in those two Dibros is incorporated Kol HaTorah Kula. Even Masha Talmud Vasik Asid L'Schadesh, every Chiddush in Torah that was ever said in any base Medrash in all of human history, somehow is incorporated in the first two Dibros that we got from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Dibor of Anochi, all Ramach Mitzvah Saseh and all the details, all the 248 Mitzvah Saseh and all the details. Lo Yelcha, all the Shasa Mitzvah Lo Saseh, all the 365 Mitzvah Lo Saseh, and all of their details. So then why do we need anything else? I mean, if everything was given directly from Hashem in those two Dibros, why do we need anything else? So he said the second element is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically gave through the Luchos and through the Torah Shebal Peh and through the Torah as we know it, that Shebazen Nikshru Atzmus Nishmoseim Shel Yisrael B'Ziv HaShchina, it created a certain connection with the Shechina itself. Shekal Dibur V'Dibur Hayanoshek L'Kal Echad MiYisrael Alpiv. There's a lashon of that Yashkeni Minashikos Pihu, that Hashem was kissing each member of Klal Yisrael with each Dibur, with each mitzvah, with each teaching that He gave us, an absolute chibur between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam. And this is a very common Kabbalistic idea. Baal HaTanya talks about this a lot also, about the difference between a Shika versus a Chibuk in the way that we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that Torah is in the Shika, whereas mitzvos are a Chibuk. So these are similar concepts that he says, that Neshika is what gave us the Koach to be Mechadesh, Torah on our own. It was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us all the Torah, but then he also gave us, B'Neshikas Pihu, he gave us the ability to be Mechadesh. So he says, that's what it means. Ilu Kirvanu V'Nasinai, V'Lonas L'Nas HaTorah means, Ba'atzmo Mipiv Yisbarach. It means, had he not gone that extra level of giving us the Torah, had he just downloaded the information on us, that would have been one thing, and also would have been valuable, and also would have fulfilled what the purpose of creation was. But he did better than that for us. He gave us Minashikas Piyu. He gave us something that's much more direct, that's a direct relationship with not only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but with the Torah, and with the ability to develop Torah. Then after the Dayenus, we go on to Rabbi Gamliel HaYomer. So Rabbi Gamliel HaYomer, Kol Shalom HaShosu Dvar Ne'el B'Pesach, Lo Yatsi Yidei Chavaso Ve'elu Hein, Pesach Matzah Umarar. So he just explains very briefly, and this is not Kabbalistic at all, he just explains that the idea of Rabbi Gamliel, what's Rabbi Gamliel being Mechadesh? It's not, he says, that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim involves telling the story of Mitzrayim. He says, of course that involves telling the story of Mitzrayim. In fact, there's nothing unique about that on the night of the Seder. We always talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. He says, the chiddush of Rabbi Gamliel is what the Gemara darshins from the Pasuk Bavur Zeh, that and then we go into the specific items that are on the table in front of us. That the way to fulfill this mitzvah is specifically with the props of the mitzvos halayla. That the ikr chiddush is to tell the bnei beisel, to tell our children the reasons for the mitzvos that we're knowing on that night, and tell the story through the mitzvos of that night. And he says that's why the Torah is that's what Rabbi Gamliel highlights in the next three paragraphs of Pesach, Matzah, Umarar. So let's go through those three paragraphs. Pesach, Matzah, Umarar. So starting with Pesach, we say Pesach Shoyu Avaseinu Ochlim. It's interesting. What's the Pesach? Pesach is a. One of my friends said to me, when did you start calling it Pesach? I said, well, that's the name, isn't it? He said, well, everyone calls it Pesach. Why would you call it Pesach? I don't know, it's the right word, no? Pesach is the right word. It's not Pesach, right? No, I don't know. Is it Pesach? Okay, so, yeah, he said, but you say all the other words wrong. Okay, so I say all the other words wrong. All right, so Pesach is al Shema. So Pesach, so you have a Seinu Ochum. But what is a Pesach? What's a Pesach? It's a carbon. You think of a carbon, what do you think? What do you do with a carbon? So you can describe something. The carbon that we are... Makriv. You don't talk about a carbon that you eat. Yeah, it happens to be. If it's not a carbonola, you eat it. Right? Other carbonos get eaten. The carbon shalom is eaten for 2 days and one night. Oh, fine, whatever. They have different zmanim of how long you eat a carbon for. But a carbon, you always think about carbon as something that you're makriv. So he says, why is it that Pesach Shoyu Avaseinu Ochlim Bizman Shabizim Shoyu Kayim? Shouldn't it be Pesach Shoyu Avaseinu Makrivim Bizman Shabizim Shoyu Kayim? Wouldn't that be the point of emphasis? So he says, based on what the Ran writes in one of his drashas, he says, the Ran writes that the idea of Makas Bechoros and the salvation of the Jewish Bechoros was a bigger miracle than we think it was. He says, because what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is not that he just made a decree against the Bechori Mitzrayim. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is he changed the entire Teva. He made some sort of disease that affects firstborns. And every firstborn was going to be affected. And then... he made an antidote for the Bnei Yisrael, for the Bechori Yisrael. meaning it was a nes betok nes. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Drush Saran writes, Kodesh Baruch Hu made in the Teva Habriya, a chiddush that Dover Shegorim Kilkul Bebuchori Bnei Adam Hu Behema, something that somehow the very first child out of a womb is somehow going to be going to be affected by whatever he put into the Bria. And it should have been Shavu L'Kol, all Bukharos, even Bukhara Yisrael. And then he made a Nes B'toch Nes by saving Klal Yisrael. How did he do it? Through the Achilas HaPesach. That they were Mekadesh, their guf, through the Achilas HaPesach, and that's what protected them and caused the Bukhara Yisrael to be immune to the plague that was striking every other Bukhara. And he says Rav Yitzchak Eisenkover, Hadover Doma L'Rofe Mumcha, Shoya Oiv La'Adam Echad. Imagine you have one doctor who has a very beloved friend, and he sees a kilkul ha'avir. He sees that there's some sort of virus or something that's going around, and he has one vial of something that will serve as a protective agent against this virus. And he gives that one vial of that protective agent, dafka, to his friend. So it's the same atmosphere around that should be killing everybody, but that friend has this force field around him that now protects him. And that's what Kodesh Baruch Hu did for the Bechor Yisrael, and the way he did it was by saying Karban Pesach is that vial of medication that's going to give you that sense, that force field, that protection. And he says, and that's why Karban Pesach is fundamentally different than all other karbanos. Every other karban, the ikar is the hakrava, and achila is an ancillary thing. Achila just happens to be what you do with it. But the Mishnayos in Pesachim say, the sixth part of Pesachim say, that the ikur of Korban Pesach is the Achilas HaPesach. That Korban Pesach is dafka nitna l'achila. You know, by every other Korban, the halacha is, I think we once discussed in the Shabbos Galdash Rasha, by every other Korban, the halacha is that you don't need to eat a kazayis of it. You're just not allowed to leave any of it over. So if you get 1,000 people to each get like a tiny little bite of it, that's less than kazayis, it's fine. You did what needed to be done. But there's no mitzvah sachila. Korban Pesach, you have to make sure that everybody who partakes gets at least the kazayis. Because everybody needs to do an actual achila. There's a real emphasis on achila when it comes to Korban Pesach. Because that achila is the method through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected us. And he suggests maybe that's why we still have Tainus Bechorim. The idea of Tainus Bechorim, meaning why would the Bechorim Yisrael, the whole concept, you never bother you that Kodesh Baruch Hu skipped over the houses of the Jewish people? Why not just not kill them, right? Meaning, what do you mean he skipped over the houses of the Jewish people? Kodesh Baruch Hu decided who was going to be killed and who was not going to be killed. No, but the idea was that he built something into Teva that was going to ruin all the Bukhorim, that was going to kill all the Bukhorim. So it was a threat to the Bukhori Israel. It wasn't just Stam, a miracle out of nowhere. It was something that because of, you're a petarechem, something in the blood as this goes through the umbilical cord or something, I don't know, there was something there, there was some medical thing there that was going to be affected because you were a Bukhar. That's the way he did it. Kodesh Baruch Hu, when he does miracles, very often couches it in Teva. And that's what the Ran says. He couched it in Teva. And then he gave this special thing called the Korban Pesach to be able to protect them. Moving on to Matzah. So Matzah Zusha no Ochlim. So one of the Yesodos that he goes back to over and over again is that there are two dinim in Matzah, but differently than everybody else says it. Meaning most people, when they say there are two dinim in Matzah, that there are two Matzahs that we talk about. There was the Lechem of, right, is matzah a positive thing or a negative thing? What kind of thoughts does matzah bring to mind? I'm not talking about like practically and constipation. Things like that. What kind of thoughts historically does matzah bring to mind? Right, so there are two things that matzah brings to mind. Number one is that it brings to mind the idea of chipazon, that it was a great miracle. We were rushed out of there so quickly, the dough didn't even have a chance to rise. We had to bring the matzah, right? That's aleph. The other thing that matzah brings to mind that most of the mefarshim will talk about is that while we were slaves, we didn't have time to allow our dough to rise, and therefore, this is lechem oni. It's lechem of avdus, right? That's the other. So this guy's chaver says differently. He says no. There are two dinim in matzah, but that's not the two dinim in matzah. The two dinim in matzah is there's matzah of the Korban Pesach. There's matzah that we ate on the night of the Seder, the Korban Pesach matzah, on that night of the Seder, that first Seder night in Mitzrayim, And then there's the matzah of chipazon of when we were leaving Mitzrayim. Not matzah of avdus. Matzah of cheirus on the night of the Seder, and matzah of cheirus when we left Mitzrayim. And he says they're fundamentally different from each other. The matzah on the night of the Seder is not allowed to be matzah ashiva. It can't be fancy. It can't be something that has flavor. It's flour and water. It's as simple as can be. And it has nothing to do with the fact that we were being rushed out of Mitzrayim. So what's it about? So he says, that matzah is about the fact that Korban Pesach and the Seder night was showing that Ribono Shel Olam, we are dedicated to you. And when one is dedicated to Avodas Hashem, the Chazal tell us, Pas B'melech Tochel, we don't eat fancy foods when we're dedicated. We don't indulge when we're dedicated to the Avodas Hashem. And therefore we take the simplest possible bread and we eat that. That's what the matzah on the night of the Seder represents. The matzah on the night of the Seder does not represent the rush out of Mitzrayim. It represents simplest possible food to show that we are low-maintenance people from a Gashmius perspective so that we can dedicate ourselves fully to Avodas Hashem. The second matzah is the matzah of Chipazon. That just can't be chametz. And that's why for 7 days, you just can't have chametz. But it could be matzah ashira, the whole rest of Yantif. It could be matzah that has flavor and other ingredients, and you can make with matzah meal cakes or whatever else you want. Right? That you could, I mean, if you're broke, whatever. But that you could do, that's no problem for the rest of Pesach. Because it's not about pashtus, the rest of Pesach. The rest of Pesach is just about the rush and not having chametz. So based on that, he says, this paragraph is a little bit troubling. Matzah zushanu ochum al shema. What's the matzah zo that we're eating? It's the Seder night matzah. It's not the 7 day matzah. So al shema, you would imagine that there wouldn't be an emphasis on the rush and the speed, and but that's exactly what the Haggadah emphasizes. Shelo hispik betzekam shalav aseinu lahachmitz ad shenigla aleim melch machem melch makrish baruchu, that we had to go out so quickly. Lo yochlu l'smameya. We emphasize the speed with which we left. So he says, it must be that Lemuel holds that even the matzah on the Seder night was also designed to be something that had to be done with great speed. And he says, and the reason for that is what the Maimon Chazal that we're all familiar with, of the Memtes Sharei Tumah and the 50th Gate of Tumah, that we could not stay in Mitzrayim for one extra second. We had to be in Mitzrayim exactly as long as we had to be there, and it would be a terrible tragedy to be there for longer. He does not get into the 50th Shar of Tum or anything like that of being an irretrievable loss. He says we couldn't be there for even Rega Achas longer than we were supposed to, because we have to remember that when Klal Yisrael is in Galus, the Shechina is also in Galus, and the entire Pamalia Shel Maila is in Tzar because the Shechina is in Galus, and we can't allow that to go on for a second longer than it was determined that it must. And therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu told us, when you know what you're going to eat for dinner that night? You're going to eat Sli Eish, because that goes quicker than cooking. When you roast something, when you barbecue it, it goes quicker. And you're going to eat matzah, because we don't have time to wait for dough to rise. And you're going to eat it b'chipazon. You're going to eat that matzah quickly, because we don't have time to wait for you to eat things in a laid-back and relaxed kind of way. And it has to be eaten by a specific time, either chatzos or the next morning, depending which tana you hold like, so that as soon as the time to leave comes, we'll be ready to get out of there, and we're not going to be first finishing up our meals. And he says, that's why even when we talk about the Seder night matzah, we also emphasize speed. We emphasize speed, but not because we were rushed out before the dough had a chance to rise. It's if the dough didn't even have a chance to rise when we left, then for sure, the dough wouldn't have had a chance to rise for the meal the night before when we were supposed to do things very, very quickly. And then on Maror, he writes that Maror, we eat Maror together with symbols of freedom, meaning Maror, it's very interesting because we eat Maror together with Pesach and Matzah. Pesach and Matzah are symbols of freedom. Maror is a symbol of bitterness. So he writes that we eat Maror together with the symbols of freedom, like Matzah and Pesach, because Hashem didn't keep us in Mitzrayim for even one extra second. Now, how was HaKadosh Baruch Hu able to get us out of Mitzrayim so quickly and achieve the tikkun that we needed to achieve? It's because it was so bitter there. Meaning, how did we get our sentence knocked down from 400 years to 210 years? because of the Marirus. Now, at the time that we were feeling the Marirus, it probably didn't feel so gishmak, right? That we were probably, well, why does it have to be so bitter? And then, but in retrospect, now that we're looking back and we're recalling what happened at Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're celebrating the Marar, because we would have been in there for another 190 years without the Marar. So the Marar got us out, the Marirus of the entire occasion. So it's Pesach, Matzah, Marar. Not that Pesach is the good stuff, Matzah has mixed messages, and Marar is the bad stuff, the way we normally think of it. It's all the good stuff. It's all something that in retrospect, and so often, that's the way it works in life. Some of the more bitter things, some of the more bitter pills we have to swallow in life, sometimes we're zocha, even within our own lifetimes, to see how the maror was actually the best thing for us, actually worked out to be the best things for us. Other times, we're not zocha to see it with our own lifetimes, but a mamin believes that we will be able to see that eventually, how it in fact was the best things for us, as unfathomable as it may be. And that's what maror represents. It's a certain sweetness to the recollection of maror. Then we go on and say, "B'chol dover dar, chayev adam liras asatzmo, kilu hu yatzav l'mitzrayim." So he says this comes to answer the question of why we still thank Hashem for Gulas Mitzrayim, considering that we're currently in Gulas. Meaning, why would I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for taking me out of Mitzrayim if I'm, if I'm in Gulas wherever I am? You know, throughout history, the Jews were not always in the most enjoyable places. It wasn't always that they were on, a Pesach program in Arizona or Florida or whatever. I mean, they were not always in the most enjoyable places. So what does it mean that b'chol dar v'dar we're gonna? So this paragraph comes to address that question, and the answer is that our Gullus is qualitatively different than Gullus Mitzrayim. The Gullus Mitzrayim was a Gullus haguf v'hanefesh, but our Gullus is a Gullus haguf and not a Gullus hanefesh. He says Gullus haguf v'hanefesh means that we were spiritually crippled in Mitzrayim. Physically, of course, that's what every Gullus is. But on top of this, we were spiritually crippled in Mitzrayim. Now, when we're in Gullus, we at least control our own destiny. We have mitzvos to get us out of Gullus. If we just observe the Taryag mitzvos, if Moli Shomi Shol Shtei Shabbos Miyado Yin Nigalin, all we need to do is keep Shabbos twice. Right? Meaning we have the ability, it's in our hands to end this Gullus, because we have spiritual tools that can bring an end to the Gullus. In Mitzrayim, they didn't have that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to engineer that at the end. He gave them Dam Pesach, Dam Mila. Okay, take these mitzvahs so you have something to get out with. But they didn't have that in the Gullus. There was no, they go to the Navi or the Rabbi or whatever, and they say, what do I need to do spiritually? What sort of tikkun? Tikkun, there's nothing. There are no mitzvahs. Just suffer with it. And that's a tremendous Gullus HaNefesh that we suffered. So that's what we're trying to suggest in this paragraph. We mention, and he says, that's why we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in Kriya Shema, because the second parasha of Kriya Shema is Kabbalah's mitzvos, right? We talk about Kabbalah's Malach Shemaim, then Kabbalah's mitzvos, and then Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why? Because we're showing that our ticket out of Gullus is Kabbalah's mitzvos, which we didn't have the benefit of in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then we go on and we say, Lefichach, אנחנו חייבים להודות, להלל, לשבח, לפאר, לרומים, לעדל, לברי, להלל, לקליס. So in this paragraph we recognize how in our generation we also have to be grateful for the geula. So we say, לבוסנו ולנו. And then we highlight each stage. And he understands it, that we really break it down into four stages. Where he says as follows, we say that we were brought, me'avdus l'cheirus, hotzi'anu me'avdus l'cheirus. So he says, that's represented by the first three makos, tatzach. Tatzach were an onesh for the mitzrim, for the backbreaking labor, and we highlight that Hashem took us, me'avdus l'cheirus, that we now weren't subjected to avdus anymore. And then we say, mi'yagon l'simcha, that relates to the makos of adash, where we elevate the stature of Klal Yisrael and show that Klal Yisrael is the Am HaNivchar. And there's a simcha in being chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the tachlis of our simcha is to serve Hashem. We have a connection with Hashem. And then, Me'evel Yom Tov, that represents the makos of Ba'achav, that shows that Hashem runs the world and causes everything to happen, both good and bad, depending on what we deserve. And it looks like some things are bad, but really everything from Hashem ultimately is for the good. And we say me'evel yom tov, referring to the recognition that even the ra is really tov, that everything is a yom tov when we have that appreciation. And then, with the bringing of the Karban Pesach, me'afelo lior gadol. We went from afelo lior gadol because it finally removed the darkness of the avodah zarah of Mitzrayim, that the process of purification of our souls that needed to happen happened with Karban Pesach. And then at Chatzos, finally, v'nomar lefanav shiru chadasha, finally at Chatzos, the galus was entirely ended, and we went mishibud l'geula. And this is really revisiting something that he mentions much earlier in the Haggadah about how there were stages in terms of purifying us in order to, meaning in the paragraph of Yochel Rosh Chodesh, says, why is it Yochel Rosh Chodesh? Because Rosh Chodesh is, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the Brias HaOlam from a Kal Yisrael perspective, from a Nes perspective. So there was something spiritually, there was an elevation in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So, Iba Yomahu Yochel Mibod Yom, why Mibod Yom? Because again, we were getting closer, because then we were being makrev Karban Pesach. We were killing the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. And then we got to the Seder night, meaning each one gets us closer and closer, but we're only fully purified and fully cleared when we get to the very end, to Chatzos. Then he points out the Dalet Kosos. He says the reason that there are four Kosos is that there are four things that are compared to a Gefen. Yerushalmi says this, meaning he puts this comment on the Bar Priya Gefen at the end of Magid. But Yerushalmi gives a number of reasons why we have four Kosos. Most famously, we say there are four Kosos because of four Lashonos of Geula. But he says there are four things that are compared by Chazal to a Gefen: the Jewish people, the world, the Olam, Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and Torah. And the relationship to the four Kosos matches up, he says. The first Kos is Kiddush, so that's the Jewish people, Asher Bachar Banu. The second Kos is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, where Hashem rejected the Derech HaTeva that he normally runs the world with, and then ran the world with this Derech Neis, which is the Yisod of this whole Haggadah. That's the Yisod he always comes back to, that the whole way Hashem interacted with the world changed, now it's Derech Neis. And the third Kos is the Kos of Birch Samazon, corresponds to Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, because that's all Birch Samazon talks about, Al Eretz Chemda, Al Yerushalayim, Al Bayis HaGadol, right? It's constantly talking about Eretz Yisrael. And the fourth Kos is on Torah, so we begin Kilushimcha Lo Lanu and Kilushimcha Ten Kavod, the entire Torah, Kilushimcha Ten Kavod, the entire Torah, the Ramban says, is Shmosa of Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it aligns perfectly. The Yerushalmi says that there are four Kosos because there are four things that are compared to a Gefen, and Yitzchak Yisachar adds, is if you look at the context around which we're having each of the four Kosos, it lines up perfectly. So again, the first one, the first thing that's compared to a Gefen is the Jewish people, and the first Kos is Kiddush, where we say Hashem Baruch Habanu. The second thing that's compared to a Gefen is the Olam, the way Hashem runs the world, and the second Kos is Yetzias Mitzrayim, where again, the whole Yisod of this Haggadah is that it fundamentally changed the way Hashem runs the world. The third thing that's compared to Gefen is Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and the third Kos is Birch Samazon, where all we're talking about is Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And the fourth is Torah. The fourth thing compared to Gefen is Torah, and it's on the fourth Kos that we say, Ki L'Shimcha Tein Kavod, and Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah, the entirety of Torah, is a shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then we move on to Shvoch Chamascha. So the Halal is split. Half before the meal relating to Geulas Mitzrayim, and half after the meal relating to Geulas Lava. So we say Shvoch Hamaska in between, because we know that we aren't fully worthy of Geula, but our enemies are worthy of punishment. So he says on the paragraph of Shvoch Hamaska, it just makes a simple Ha'ara, meaning Shvoch Hamaska is what splits the two parts of Halal, again, because there's Geulas Mitzrayim, and there's, he says, half before the meal is Geulas Mitzrayim, the other half is Geulas Lavo. So we Shvoch Hamascha is in between, because we're not really fully worthy of Geula, but throughout all the years, our enemies are worthy of, are deserving of being punished. So he says, if you look carefully at the paragraph of Shvoch Hamascha, we talk about our enemies in two different ways. We talk about our enemies as people who are asher lo yidu'ucha, that people who do not know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and asher b'shimcha lo karu, lo karo, that the people who did not call out the Shem Hashem. And he says that's because among non-believers there are two categories. There are those that deny God's existence entirely, and then there are those that agree that God exists but assume that he left the world to be controlled by other forces, and therefore they don't pray to him. So asher lo yidu'ucha are those that deny God's existence entirely. Asher b'shimcha lo kara'u means they know that he exists, but they're not going to pray to him because he's not running the world anymore from their perspective. So we highlight, you know, a lot of times we think of our enemies only in terms of what they've done to us. You know, how much have they killed and, you know, abused and beaten and whatever, you know, and all the things that they've done to us. But we have to realize that fundamentally our religion is a religion of beliefs and ideology. And the most abhorrent thing in the Torah is Avodah Zarah, right? I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more disgusted, if you just read the Chumash and Navi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more disgusted by Avodah Zarah than anything else. So we have to highlight, when we highlight our enemies, it's not enough to only highlight the fact that they do things to us that we don't like. We have to highlight the fact that they do things to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we don't like. That there's a great Chilul Hashem in the success of people who don't believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam. That there's a great Chilul Hashem in the success of people who don't believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam continues to run the world. So after talking about all these horrible things that the Mitzvah did to us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu defended us, we say, Shvach HaMascha L'Agayim, Asher L'Yidu'ucha, V'Mamachos Asher B'Shimcha L'Okro. It's not only about us, it's about your Ribbono Shel Olam, that it was a Chilul Hashem. Then we go on to continue the Hallel, and in Hallel, we have Hallelu Es Hashem, you know, that line of Hallel that comes right before the Hodu Hashem Kitov. Hallelu Es Hashem Kol Goyim Shamchu Kalu Umim Ki Gavar Leinu Chazu Vemes Hashem Liolam Halleluka. He says this line of Hallel relates to the way the Umos HaOlam will appreciate one day how important the Beis Hamikdash was. He says, you know, the Chazal tell us, "Umalei hayu yodim umas holam masha avdu al yidei chorban beis hamikdash." If they would have known what they're losing because of the chorban abayis, lo yemanich nosa lahachrit, they never would have allowed the beis hamikdash to be destroyed. Because kol zman that there was a beis hamikdash, there was a shefa that came down to Klal Yisrael from the Shara Shemayim to the beis hamikdash al mata, which was the focal point of the whole planet. And through that, all the Umos HaOlam were able to be yonek, a certain bracha that overflowed from the Mikdash. So the Mikdash was a source of chizik, not only for Klal Yisrael, but for the Umos HaOlam as well. And Chazal tell us that, you know, had they recognized what they would have lost, they would never have allowed it to happen. The bracha that spilled over was a bracha that they benefited from. So there are two phrases following the line, Halu Es Hashem Kol Goyim Shabchuhu Kol Umim. Number one is Ki Gavar Aleinu Chasdo. When Hashem pours on bracha on Klal Yisrael, the entire world benefits from the overflow. And the Emes Hashem Liolam Halleluka. Right? The Emes Hashem Liolam Halleluka, just the knowledge of the presence of Hashem, where they can remove the mask of foolishness that somehow covers Hashem's existence, is something that also they are grateful for. So we're, again, this paragraph starts, Halu Hashem Kol Goyim, Shamchu Kol Umim. It's not about us. It's about the nations of the world, that they should praise Hashem. Because when we had a Beis HaMikdash, number one, Gavar Aleinu Chasdo, that the Chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave was so overpowering and overwhelming that it overflowed to all the nations as well. And number two, just the knowledge that there's a God in the world, the knowledge of the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, where like when a person has like a moment where they recognize truth and they think, what was I thinking all that time? Thank God my eyes were opened up, you know, that I'm able to see and appreciate something real and something true and something good. And that's the Emes Hashem Liolam Halleluka. Then we go on to the Hodul Hashem. It's just a matter of halacha. When you say the Hallel, it should be said responsibly. The Hodul Hashem Kitovs Gilom Chasdo, just like you do in Shul, around the Seder table, it should also be said responsibly. So we should keep that. Someone should lead and you should respond. Hodul Hashem Kitov and Yom Yisrael, etc. Like, just again, just like you would do in Shul. The premise is that in Olam Hazeh, it's not easy to discern who's a tzaddik and who's a rasha. Because sometimes tzaddikim suffer and sometimes rashaitim don't. And the reason is that the neshamos aren't complete yet. And sometimes the tzaddik needs an onesh to cleanse him of whatever ra there is, while the rasha needs to be rewarded for whatever minimal good he has done. But lasa lavo, it says, v'shaftim u'isim bein tzaddik l'rasha bein ovid elukim l'asher lo avado. That one day you're going to see the difference between a tzaddik and rasha. You're going to see the difference between an Ovid Elokim and a Sherlo Avado, someone who does not serve Hashem. Which means that not only will we be able to distinguish between tzaddik and rasha just based on whether good things happened to him or bad things happened to him. Las Lavo, the tzaddik, he already had his tikkun, so all the good things are going to happen right away. The rasha, all the bad things are going to happen right away. But also we're going to see a difference between a tzaddik gomor and a tzaddik sheino gomor. Asher avado ben Ovid Elokim la Asher lo avado means Ovid Elokim is a tzaddik gamur, Asher lo avado is tzaddik sheino gamur. Also, this brings memories of the Tanya, the beginning of Sefer HaTanya, where you also have these ideas that Ovid Elokim and lo avado. The Chazal tell us tzaddik gamur, tzaddik sheino gamur, but it's highlighted very much in the Sefer HaTanya. But that's the phrase. That's why the Gemara says Lo Avado refers to somebody who reviewed the Gemara 100 times, whereas Oved Elokim is someone who reviewed it 101 times. That even just the nuances of difference between a tzaddik and a tzaddik gomor is going to be recognizable. And he says the categories of people are broken down based on this paragraph of Hallel. What do we have? We have four statements. Hodul Hashem Kitov Kiyom Chazo, Yomer Yisrael Kiyom Chazo, Yomer Aves Aaron Kiyom Chazo, Yomer Yireh Hashem Kiyom Chazo. So he says the gerim that attach themselves are the to the Beis Yaakov. That's Hodul Hashem Kitov Kigolam Chazdo. That's I guess the lowest madrega of neshama, so to speak. Then the Jewish people who are on a slightly higher level of neshama and have achieved a certain dveikus. That's Yomer Yisrael Kigolam Chazdo. And then on top of that, you have Shevet Levi, who were chosen to be the ones who do the avodah in the Beis Hamikdash and go in the Kodesh Kodashim and receive great shefa from the avodah that they do in the Beis Hamikdash. Yomer Neves Aaron Kilon Chasdo. But then on top of that, on top of all of that, all the yichus and all the everything else that you might want to say gives someone an advantage, you know, that he starts off, you know, with an advantage in life. The Talmidei Chachamim and the Tzaddikim are greater than all the yichus in the world. Afilu Mamzer Talmud Chacham Kodem L'Koyin Gadol Ha'aretz. They're the closest to Hashem. And therefore we conclude, Yomurna Yirei Hashem Ki Li'olam Chasdo. That it's an ascending order of who is most chashuv. So it feels a little depressing at first, right? Because it's like, wait, why should a ger have a lower neshama than a regular person? Why should, just without me, Yisrael, why should I have a lower neshama than a Kohen or a Levi? Lamaisa, I do, right? But if a person is able to make themselves into a Talmud Chacham, and that's up to each and every one of us, then their neshama soars beyond even the neshama of a Kohen. Because filu mamzer Talmud Chacham is called them the Kohen Gadol Ama Aretz. And those are the four stages over here. Then he moves on to the Halal HaGadol. Halal HaGadol are the Kili Olam Chazdas, right? Hodol Hashem Kitov Kili Olam Chazdas. How many are there of Halal HaGadol? How many Kilon Chazos?
One good.
Oh, someone didn't mute. Okay, how many Halal? There are 26, right? So 26 Kilon Chazos. So he says that relates to the 26 generations prior to Matan Torah that existed purely based on the Chesed of Hashem. Again, it's a theme he keeps coming back to, right? That prior to Matan Torah, you couldn't do mitzvos to make it, you know, to earn your keep. There was no Torah. So there was nothing, there was no Torah that we were given yet. So there was nothing you could really do to earn your keep. So the existence of the world for 26 generations was kilom chasod, kilom chasod, kilom chasod. It was all chesed, chesed, chesed of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And after Matan Torah, the Midas Hadin kicks in. So it's not Midas HaChesed, because once we have the Torah and we have the ability to earn it, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to give it for free anymore, because that's what we call Nama Tikisufa. If a person is given a free gift and he doesn't earn it, so it's embarrassing that he has to take something for free. So that's the 26 Kilon Chasdos till we get to the point of Matan Torah where we're able to have a sense of din. Then we have, going on to Mirza at the very end, Kilo Na'a Kilo Ya'er. He quotes from his father. It's the only time in the whole Haggadah that I noticed that he quoted from his father. He says, Shamati Davar Na'a B'zem Mipi Adoni Avi Mori Arava Gadol Amenoch Asher Hayinikra Rab Yaakov Chaver. So he says that, what do we say? L'cha U'l'cha, L'cha Ki L'cha, L'cha Af L'cha, So a lot of luchas over here. So he quotes from his father that the repetition of lucha lucha, lucha ki lucha, and lucha af lucha represent the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu has olamos elyonim, which are shamayim u'shmei shamayim, that are miyuchad just for him. That there are places in the stratosphere that we don't visit, that are just for Kodesh Baruch Hu. There are places in shamayim and shmei shamayim that are just for Kodesh Baruch Hu. But there's also Hashemayim Shemayim LaHashem Va'aretz Nasan L'Vnei Adam. There's also the Aretz, which he gives us the ability to exist on, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is M'lo Kol Aretz Kvodo. Even though he gives us the ability to exist in the Aretz, he also exists in the Aretz. So he says that's L'cha U'l'cha, that's the Shemayim Shemayim. L'cha Ki L'cha is the other levels of Shemayim. L'cha Af L'cha, that even you exist. That's referring to the Aretz. So L'cha Ki L'cha represents places designated just for Hashem, and we have no Asaga in it. L'cha Af L'cha represents places that is for the created as well as for the creator. And then he goes on to Echad Miyodea. So he has a Mahalik Echad Miyodea that we can't really go through. He goes through each number, but let me at least tell you the Yesod that he has. He says, L'chora, this song or this piyut it sounds silly. It's mechusar havana. It says mi yodea. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that there's one Hashem. Everybody knows that there are two luchos. Everybody knows that there are three elohim. Anyone who has like a kindergarten education, you don't have to have made it too far in yeshiva to know these answers. What does it mean, mi yodea? It sounds like a silly question. Everybody knows these things. Little kids know these things. What do you mean mi yodea? Also, what does any of this have to do with secret system trying? Meaning it's just random facts about Judaism. It's like, at the end of the Seder, you have four cups of wine, let's sit down for some Yedios Klalios. What does it have to do with Yedios Mitzrayim? So he says the entire piyut emphasizes the Yedios Mitzrayim was, the goal of Yedios Mitzrayim was for us to be Makabal the Torah and become the chosen Am Kadosh. And what the piyut highlights are 13 ways that our relationship with Hashem is entirely unique. That we have a unique relationship with Hashem that nobody else has. He says, the first one, Echad Miyodeh, Echad Elokeinu, Sheba Shemayim Va'aretz. It's that Hashem gave us what he calls Sod Achduso. That when Echad Elokeinu means, what the Gemara says, that just like the Gemara says, Atem asusini chativa achas ba'olam, v'ani aseh eschem chativa achas ba'olam. The Kodesh Baruch Hu has a deal with us. You made me the unique one and only God, I make you the unique one and only nation. Like the tefillin of Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Gemara in Baruch Hu says, Mikamcha Yisrael, goy echod ba'aretz. Echod doesn't mean one and not two. I mean, it means that also. But when we say Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Shem Echad, it means pure singularity. That there is nothing else. Nothing else exists. There's nothing else in the world. And from our perspective, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, because that's the truth of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us that sense of Echad as well in return. So I got to the end of the Haggadah. I didn't do the beginning of the Haggadah. But the beginning has a lot of nice words. But I'll put that in a separate. It's already recorded, so I'll upload both of them as a Shem online. And if you have ideas for next year, let me know which Haggadah we should do next year. Okay, have a good night, everybody. All right.